To the left-hand side for Vieira, who'll play it through to Gabriel Jesus, who's in here for Arsenal. Gabriel Jesus to finish it off. Oh, what a way to do it! Gabriel Jesus seals the points for Arsenal. He's back, and he's back with a bang.
Into the penalty area it goes. Gabriel Jesus, and it's into the back of the net. Arsenal take an early lead through Gabriel.
You're listening to the Chronicles of Aguna, the daily Arsenal podcast with me, Harry Simeon.
Hey everybody, how's it going? Hope you're all good. Hope you're all well. Welcome back to another live edition of the Chronicles of Aguna, the Arsenal podcast, part of course, the 90 Min Football family. Back on top, back top of the pile, Arsenal back to winning ways. Wasn't a vintage Arsenal performance. I think we can probably all agree on that. But all tonight was about was getting 3 points on the board. All tonight was about was making sure that we didn't allow the bad result against Aston Villa in the Premier League to kind of carry over and have a knock-on effect. And look, we were talking about it a little bit earlier on today. I don't think we're the favourites to win the Premier League. And come the end of the season, I'll be very surprised, actually, if we are the side lifting the trophy, if we are the side having the open-top bus parade and all of that stuff. But it's imperative that we fight for it until the very, very end. It's imperative that we show we've taken another step forward. And what I really wanted to see tonight was a response. What I really wanted to see tonight was, well, first and foremost, Arsenal going out there and getting the 3 points. But I wanted to see a committed display more than a display of the incredible technical level that we all know that this team is capable of, because I think that would tell me more about where the team is at mentally. I still think that we look really, really tired. And I still think that we've got a lot of players that are running on empty at the moment. But we were able to dig deep tonight and we were able to find what we needed in order to make sure that we got over the line. Goals at the end of both halves. Leandro Trossard's goal broke the deadlock right on the stroke of half time. And then, of course, Martin Odegaard added a second to put the game beyond doubt late on. We're going to get into the ins and outs of the game. We're going to talk about what this means in the context of the title race. I'm also going to take lots of your thoughts and your questions from the live chat. So please do get them in. Let's say a few hellos, because I can see there are a load of you with us at the moment. Adam says, it was very much a get the job done performance, and I'm all for it. Just need Fulham and Brighton to give us some more hope. EW Maestro says, the primary objective is to get 3 points from every match until the season ends. The performance stuff can come back in at the beginning of the new season. Gunner329 says, Jesus showed good persistence for the goal, but I'm surprised him and Partey are still looking so rusty. Jesus had one or two good sort of appearances in other games, but he's still far from his best. Lots of chat about Jesus in the live chat. Ray Anderson says, I think he's still suffering from an injury. He's been talking recently, hasn't he, about the pain that he feels pretty much every time he takes to the field. So there's obviously an issue still with him. Arjit makes the point there as well. Wesbird says, I turned Sky off to watch you. Thank you very much. And Wesbird did ask as well how I'm feeling. Very, very kind of you. I'm okay. I've been chilling a lot of the day today, just taking it easy, watching sport from my sofa rather than traveling all over the bloody place. And yeah, I'm feeling okay. I'll go to bed after this, though. I'm not going to get brave and have a late night. I'm going to finish this up, go and watch Match of the Day, maybe, just to watch the Arsenal game back again. And then, of course, I'll watch the full game tomorrow. Probably come down to the man cave, tell the wife I'm working or something, just to avoid whatever chores are going to get thrown my way on a Sunday that I'm at home. thank you all. For your kind words about the show as well. Really, really appreciate it. What have we got? Mario says, come on, you Gunners. You have to give those boys credit after losing the last two games and traveling away and then going there and getting a result. What a team. And you can see they're all fighting for each other. That's the thing, isn't it? Like, I talked about it a little bit earlier on, right at the start of the pod, in fact. I said, what I wanted to see first and foremost was a commitment, a willingness to go out there and put things right, a desire to do that. We know that football is not that simple, and there will be times where you're not at your best and things aren't clicking. And if you just lack even 5, 10% of sharpness, you can end up taking heavy touches. You can end up maybe not thinking quickly enough. You can end up not setting off on making certain runs early enough and timing those things right. So much can go wrong when there is even the slightest drop off in terms of your physical level, because that's the way the modern game is. And so although the physical level was lacking, to see Arsenal find a way, dig deep and get the result that they needed is obviously very, very encouraging. Let's start right at the top of the show with the team that Mikel Arteta picked. David Raya was, of course, in goal. White, Saliba, Gabriel and Kivior were the back four. Odegaard, Rice and Havertz were the midfield. And then the front three was made up of Saka, Jesus and Trossard. Now, I tweeted something just before the game started. And I'll sort of read it to you. Because I think although we won the game and although, you know, Wolves didn't cause us too many problems, and you have to caveat all of that, by the way, with the fact that Wolves do have, I think, six of their first 11 missing at the moment. Wolves are a side that have got big results against big sides this season. They, of course, beat Manchester City. I think they got home and away victories against Spurs. They got results off Chelsea. They are a side that can go toe-to-toe with the very best in this division, but without a number of key players, it was always going to be difficult for them. I said before the game, and this was a tweet I put out, I said, I hope I'm wrong, but I think we lack midfield structure with Havertz and Odegaard in there. When Rice was strutting his stuff earlier on in the season and dominating all the time, we could get away with it. He's looked tired recently, and so I'm not sure I'd have gone with that. Declan Rice, in my opinion, was the man of the match. Declan Rice was everywhere again. And I don't know how that was possible, given how tired he looked the other night in Munich, given how tired he's looked in a number of recent games. The only way that you can explain the fact that Declan Rice was far more dominant in terms of covering ground again is that he dug deep mentally and found a reserve of energy that he maybe didn't know he had. And with the right coaching, with the right motivational speaking and all the rest of it, and that desire that I'm sure he has to go on and succeed at Arsenal and lead Arsenal to a major trophy, you know, that's obviously given him that second wind, if you like, and that extra bit of energy and the ability to put in a display like the one he did tonight. I think Kai Havertz was putting in his shift work-wise. He always does. But he is someone who is obviously more attack-minded than a Jorginho would be or a Thomas Partey would be. And so my worry pre-game was that having two such forward-thinking players like Havertz and Odegaard in the midfield was going to actually make it more difficult for Rice on the defensive side of things. And given that going into the game, I didn't feel like Rice was anywhere near his peak fitness levels. You know, I feel like he's really been worked hard since moving to Arsenal. I thought that that might be a problem. Having said that, I did think that was going to be a problem based on my expectation that Wolves were going to cause a lot more difficulties for Arsenal than they actually did. So maybe, you know, had Wolves been at a higher level, had Wolves had some of those players available. I know everybody's had to cope and deal with injuries, but I think the lower down the league you go, the more significant that is, right? Because those sides don't have the depth to cover and to accommodate those who are absent. But I just think today it was fine and Rice looked really good. Again, well, maybe really good's a bit of a stretch. It wasn't vintage Declan Rice. It wasn't the best version of Declan Rice, in my opinion. But it was a better version of Declan Rice than we've seen in recent games. And I think that wasn't necessarily because of the fact that he had Havertz and Odegaard next to him. I actually think that that makes his job at times more difficult. And particularly when you don't have Zinchenko at left back coming in field and supporting. And you've got a more natural defender who's probably a little bit reluctant to make those types of runs play in there in Jakub Kivior. So I'll give Declan Rice his flowers tonight because I thought he was really, really good. But the point I was getting to, and I keep kind of diverting away from because I don't really want to say it because it feels like I'm trying to take something away from an Arsenal player, and I never really want to do that. Feels like had Wolves been a bit better, had Wolves had some of those midfield players in particular available, we might have seen Declan Rice struggle a little bit at times. And maybe Mikel Arteta would have made a different change later on in the game. Maybe he'd have looked at the whole situation differently. But, you know, we were able to cope tonight. And you got to give Declan Rice in particular in that midfield his flowers. I thought Havertz was good too. Leandro Trossard came in on the left flank. And look, I've said many a times that I believe that Leandro Trossard is far more effective when he comes off of the substitutes bench than he is, generally speaking, when he starts games. I have to say, up until the goal, Trossard had frustrated me a little bit. There were a couple of moments where I just thought he made the wrong decision. There was one instance in that first half where he got in behind the defence, and there were a couple of Arsenal players in the penalty area, and he looks up, and rather than just playing across left-footed, which I'm sure he's more than capable of doing, he tries to play this blockbuster curling ball into the penalty area with the outside of his right boot, and he gets it wrong, and it's straight into the arms of José Sarr in the Wolves goal. But then he does what Trossard does best, and that's when an opportunity comes and he hasn't got that much time to kind of make a decision or figure out what the situation requires. Instinct kicks in and Leandro Trossard shows what a very good finisher he is. Now, people will say that goal was lucky. I've had a few friends of mine, non-Arsenal supporters, obviously texting me going, how lucky was that? Bloody hell. Jammy, he's just swung a boot at it, etc., etc., etc. Yeah, you know, to a degree, it is a bit of a snapshot. And there is an element of luck with regards to the angle and the fact that Trossard probably doesn't get a hold of the ball in the way that he'd like. But the spin on it, it is not quite enough to spin it away from the post. And instead, it does come off the inside of the post and find its way in the back of the net. Who cares? That was maybe the rub of the green that we needed and that we've been lacking, I would say, in the last week or so. So to have that is obviously massive. To get our noses in front in this game was really, really important. A lot was made of the fact against Bayern Munich the other night that we've really struggled to come back from behind in games. People have made a bigger deal of that statistic, in my opinion, than they should have done. And I think that's a lot to do with the fact that we've rarely been behind this season. And so if you look at the number of times that we've turned it around from being behind, of course, the number's going to be low. You can only really use that stat, in my opinion, if you add the context to it with regards to how many times we've actually gone behind. And the truth is, we haven't been behind in games that often. And so how many opportunities did we have to come from behind for you to be kind of using that statistic and maybe using it as a bit of a stick to beat this Arsenal side with? So Saka played from the right, Jesus up front. It's not really working for me anymore. The work rate is there, even though he doesn't quite look at his normal level in terms of sharpness in and around the penalty area, in terms of, you know, providing that spark. Dropped very, very deep at points in the game today. And I think he can do that when Kai Havertz is playing in the midfield, because he can do that knowing that there's somebody in the midfield with that kind of offensive / centre forward instinct to then drift into the area that Gabriel Jesus vacates. If he vacates that area all the time and there's nobody going in there and filling the hole, then there will be situations where you work the ball into the box and no one's there and it becomes incredibly frustrating. So Jesus used to do that a lot last season, and it used to drive me mad because in Granit Xhaka, you had someone that was, you know, predominantly a defensive midfielder for most of his career, did his best to kind of adapt and to do the things that Mikel Arteta was asking of him in the latter stages of his Arsenal career. But Kai Havertz has that instinct, I think, to go and follow things up, to go and chase things up, to go and put himself in spaces that he spots being vacated based on some of the movement that Gabriel Jesus provides. So I think that's probably why, in answer to Odradek's question, Jesus especially was dropping quite deep at times today. We'll go through some individual performances in a minute. I do want to run through some of the key events in the game first. I mean, some of the challenges that Arsenal's players were subject to in this game were ridiculous. I thought the referee took way too long to deal with those types of things. Didn't really set a precedent with regards to the fact that you will be booked for those types of challenges. And I think Wolves were actually quite lucky to end the game with 11 men. I thought the challenge on Kai Havertz in the first half was a red card. And I also thought the Hwang one in the second half was right on the border as well of what's acceptable and what's punishable with a red card. I thought that was a really rough challenge as well. There were people jumping and leading with their arms. There was all sorts going on. And I really do feel like the referee let himself down in that department. I don't particularly rate Tierney as a referee. I think he's one of the worst referees in the Premier League. I'm allowed to have that opinion. I'm entitled to have that opinion. We've got a dreadful record away from home with Paul Tierney, so I'm glad that that's come to an end. But I just didn't enjoy seeing a group of players that we know are on the edge physically already, that are struggling, that are suffering, being allowed to be kicked lumps out of by a fellow Premier League side without the referee, sort of stepping in and trying to put a stop to that nice and early. Obviously, the one scare that we had in the game, I would argue, was, of course, the moment where Jakub Kivior got caught out. Jakub Kivior, for me, we keep looking at him and we keep saying, well, you know, what do we think of him? Is Jakub Kivior someone that has a future at Arsenal Football Club? Where is his future? Is it at left back? Is it at centre back? I honestly believe that when Jurrien Timber comes back into the picture, we're going to see a lot less of Jakub Kivior. And I don't necessarily think that's fair on him. You know, he did come to the club as a centre-back, but obviously Mikel Arteta's not really wanted to fiddle around with that partnership of Gabriel and Saliba, which has been brilliant. By the way, that's our sixth away game in the league on the bounce now that we've kept a clean sheet in, a testament to the defensive unit on the whole. But Jakub Kivior got himself in a bit of trouble with João Gomes, who then sped away from him, had a shot from the angle, which was tipped onto the post, onto the woodwork by David Raya. Good, smart stop from him. And that was the only real scare. And it came from an Arsenal mistake. Wolves, generally, as an attacking force, were non-existent this evening. And that is, again, credit to our team and our midfield and our defensive line for being able to keep them far enough away from David Raya's goal so as not to trouble him. But I was thinking about, you know, Kivior in that left back position and why it is that for someone who I look at as a centre back and think, you know what, you can do a good job in that position as and when we need you. Why is he so vulnerable in those one-on-one defensive situations? I mean, it doesn't make sense. You think centre back, you think, yeah, should be able to go and confront somebody 1v1 and be strong and be difficult to get past and you know, be wily and be physical and aggressive, a bit like Gabriel is when he steps out of that back line. And the conclusion I've come to is that Jakub Kivior is not a roamer. Jakub Kivior is a defender that is at his best when he's part of a compact defensive line, when he's got other people close to him, when he is watching the game unfold in front of him, when he's not having to worry about people making runs on the outside of him, and when he's not having to worry about drifting into midfield spaces as well. And obviously, look, when Mikel Arteta made the decision to pick Jakub Kivior at left back, whenever that first time was, Jakub Kivior would have known straight away that it's a different position and there was different skills required in order to do that job well. But I just think it's a classic case of square peg in round hole. I don't think it is that Jakub Kivior is a bad defender. I think he's a certain profile of defender and he requires certain elements to be around him in order to get the best out of him. And today you saw it again. Ask him to go out into a more aggressive position. Ask him to go and confront people or to receive the ball in areas that he's not normally comfortable in. You will see the vulnerability. And I think a better team than Wolves tonight, and Wolves are a good team overall, but a better team than Wolves on the night would have pinpointed him as the weakness, and they would have gone after him time and time and time again. But we just about had enough to make sure that that wasn't too much of an issue tonight. So that was the scare that we had. We had plenty of shots from outside the box in that first period. And I mentioned Leandro Trossard's goal already. I do want to talk about Gabriel Jesus's role in that goal, because he gives the defender a little bit of a nudge and then he falls to the ground. But the way he's able to get himself back up off the ground and stay alert and stay sharp and help the ball into Trossard's path, I think, is quite magnificent. And that's the good side of Gabriel Jesus, that tenacity, the fact that he's always switched on, the fact that he's always alert. And obviously we benefited from that. I think the timing of that goal as well was absolutely huge, because you go in at halftime, 15 minutes to mull over what's gone on in that first period, and you'd have looked at it as an Arsenal player and gone, we've had most of the ball. We've been the ones that have been registering attempts on goal. Wolves have offered very little. The one time they did get forward to good effect, David Raya stepped up, and credit to David Raya, of course. But I think psychologically, it probably would have been quite difficult for those Arsenal players to go and sit in that changing room at halftime, knowing that, again, they'd played better than the opposition, yet they were unable to get their noses in front. And then I think that fear and the almost PTSD based on what's happened against Villa and against Bayern in games where they've played better than sort of what the result was and what they got in the end, I think that would have kicked in a little bit. So I think actually getting the goal right at the start, right at the end of that first period was massive psychologically. The timing of it was so, so important. We then take it on, of course, to the second period, where, again, it was kind of like a half a good performance. Like, it wasn't great. It wasn't outstanding. You could see that the intentions were right. You could see that we were working the ball into a lot of all of the right spaces and areas. Again, though, final decision making, not always right. Execution of passes and things not always right. And then, of course, right at the death of the game, Martin Odegaard got the goal, which sealed it. And I was screaming at Martin Odegaard, because initially he tries to cut the ball back and I was just going, why have you tried to pass that, man? Just put your foot through it, put it in the back of the net and win the game for us. Unfortunately, it came back to him and he didn't hesitate that second time. But I do think that although it wasn't a great Arsenal performance, it wasn't vintage Arsenal and all of that stuff, and I don't really think there's that much to analyse from this game in terms of tactical stuff and, you know, the real deep dives that we normally like to do. I always do those after I've watched the game back in full anyway, and I realise that, you know, you're listening to this at a point where you're listening to me speak at a time where I haven't done that yet. But I do think, again, we look really tired. I do think, again, we looked exhausted. I do think, again, it was obvious to everybody watching that we were running on empty. But again, I can't figure out for the life of me why Mikel Arteta was so reluctant to make changes in the game. I know we were only 1-0 up, and I know that the margins are very small at that stage in a game when the scoreline is as it was at that point. But there's loads of talk about how our squad is better nowadays. There's loads of talk about how Mikel Arteta finally has a squad that he can trust. Yet his actions say something else. Because, you know, Declan Rice, for example, was on a yellow card from the first half. You know, he's a player that you really, really need to protect. You had both Jorginho and Thomas Partey on the bench, and Mikel Arteta refused to bring any of them on until he brought on Thomas Partey to replace a striker with 10 minutes to go. No sign of Jorginho. Martin Odegaard was carrying a problem going into the Bayern game, looked incredibly unfit that night, looked like he was running out of steam in this game again. And again, Mikel Arteta refuses to make a change. He's got Fabio Vieira on the bench. He's got Emile Smith Rowe on the bench, players that he always talks about in glowing terms, players that you'd think he would back to go out there and do a job. I don't think taking someone off from your sort of attacking quartet, if you like, and swapping them with someone who's going to do a very similar job should weaken you defensively to the point where you throw away the lead. But it's as if Mikel Arteta is really fearful of upsetting the balance at times. I know what Odegaard brings you in terms of the way he defends from the front is unique. And that obviously plays a part of it. Add to that, he's the captain as well. I'm sure all of that stuff, is considered. Leandro Trossard was the other player that made way. Jesus made way on 80 minutes for Thomas Partey. Trossard was replaced by Gabriel Martinelli on 72 minutes. But I just think, given how exhausted and tired everyone looked, I expected Mikel Arteta to go a little bit earlier with the changes, particularly in that midfield area where he didn't do anything until we got to the 80th minute or so. He doesn't want to upset the balance. He doesn't want to run the risk of changing things and seeing maybe the pendulum swing the other way. I get all of that. But it just seems strange to me because we're all talking about how out of gas this team is. We've heard Pep Guardiola today have a massive rant on BBC Sport about the turnaround time between his side's Champions League game and the fixture that they've had to play in the FA Cup semi-finals today. So there is a big ongoing debate around player welfare, and there is clearly an impact that we're seeing from this, because I think the standards drop at this point in the season when actually they should be at their highest. I think you see players picking up knocks, injuries, not looking at 100%. Yet, for all that talk and for all that chat, and given that we have a squad that he's supposed to trust a hell of a lot more, he's still really, really slow to kind of make those changes and be proactive in that sense. But hey, is what it is. Look, I talked about the Odegaard goal. Brilliant way to wrap it up. It's another clean sheet. We go back to the top of the league. And as I've said already a little bit earlier on today on the last episode, it's really, really important that Arsenal go out and beat Chelsea now on Tuesday, because if we do and we move 4 points clear of Manchester City before they play their game on Thursday, that could, you know, really pile the pressure on them. Now, I'm not even saying that they'll crumble under that pressure. I'm not saying there's any guarantee, actually, that us winning against Chelsea on Tuesday puts City in a position where they're, you know, in danger of dropping points on Thursday. But you got to do it, haven't you? You've got to put them in that position. And if they come through those tests with flying colours, then they deserve to be champions at the end of the season. But we really do have to give our absolute all. We have to keep going. We have to keep plugging away. And we have to make sure that we're there in case they drop points. And if we're there right until the end, regardless of what happens, I'll be proud. I'll be grateful for the progress that we've made. And the initial hurt, yeah, it will be there, but I think it will fade away over time, because this team is going to win major trophies. This team is going to win one of the big ones under this manager. I'm convinced of that. How long it will take, I don't know. Hopefully not too much longer, but I am convinced that this team is moving in the right direction. And so I'm going to continue backing them and supporting them, and hopefully we get to where we want to be. Going to take a short pause, then going to take some of your questions before we leave. I can't stay on the stream too long this evening, unfortunately, but we'll bring you another episode of the podcast very, very soon, where we'll maybe pick a specific subject. You know what? We might do a bit of analysis on Kivior at left back. I think that's an interesting talking point, because I feel like every time he plays left back, there's a couple of moments where we look at him and we go, uh-oh, and then there's maybe 80 minutes of a game where we look at him and go, actually, he's quite solid. So what is it about Jakub Kivior that Mikel Arteta likes? And what is it about Jakub Kivior that gives Mikel Arteta the confidence to play him at left back? We'll do perhaps a little bit of a deep dive into that. The reason I can't stay massively long on this edition of the podcast is because the wife's out with friends, and I've drafted my mum in. I called her to come and sit at my house so that she could put the kids to bed and stuff, so that they wouldn't disturb me when watching when watching Wolves Arsenal. And I've got her hanging around until I finish this podcast before she can go home. Poor woman. Right, let's take your questions. We'll do that right after this. Okay. What have we got in the live chat? Let's take this one from Siege AFC, who says, I've realized that if Arteta can play the same squad through the season whilst only making a few subs during the campaign, that just shows the players can I've realized if Arteta can play the same squad through the season whilst only making a few subs during the campaign, that just shows the players can compete. Do you mean in terms of it shows that the players that we do have are pretty robust given that they play so much football and they're still in the mix? Or do you mean that it says that maybe our squad is not quite strong enough for us to be able to make those rotations? Because I did make this point on the last episode as well, and I really do believe this. I think it's really, really easy to go, why hasn't he rotated earlier in the season? And if he did that, maybe we'd be in a better spot in terms of our condition right now. But then I think to myself, would we be in the title race? Would we be top of the pile as we are now? I know that City and Liverpool have games in hand, but would we be top of the pile with five of our games left to play if he did that earlier in the season? Or would we have dropped more points along the way and perhaps been in a position where we were out of touch? Maybe. It's very, very difficult to know. What else have we got? MM says, what Chelsea did to a tired Manchester City makes me worried for next week. Yeah, I watched that game before the Arsenal game, perks of staying home today. I thought that Chelsea were pretty good in a lot of phases of the game, but they just don't pack a punch up front. And, you know, I've had many conversations with people over the course of the season about Nicholas Jackson. I think he can be brilliant one week, and I think he can be incredibly frustrating the next. And he was incredibly frustrating today, which probably means he's going to have a blinder at the Emirates on Tuesday, so beware. But, yeah, look, Chelsea ran them close. Chelsea played quite well for large spells of that game. But you need to be clinical, and you need to be able to make those moments count. And it is about moments at this stage in the season. Mikel Arteta will tell you that too. And Manchester City seem to be able to find them. It does help when you've got a load of quality players. And look, I would argue that our squad is stronger than some people would argue, would say. I'd argue that it's maybe stronger than Mikel Arteta believes, given his reluctance to call on some of those players. It's really, really interesting. But yeah, I think we're going to need to freshen it up a little bit at some stage. We just have to. Steve says, would you make a change up front on Tuesday, considering we have two London derbies this week? Nketiah usually plays well against Chelsea, and Jesus would be rested for Spurs. Personally, you know, if he's fit enough, I'd play Kai Havertz up front in both of those games, both Chelsea and Spurs. I just think he gives you something different to Jesus at the moment. He gives you more goal threat than Jesus at the moment as well, which obviously helps when you're playing at centre forward. Jesus feels to me at the moment like someone who can come on in impact games in 20, 30 minute periods, given the problems that he's dealing with and the injury that he's nursing at the moment. Me, I would play Havertz in those games, but my opinion might change by the time we come around to those actual fixtures. Wesbird says, you've got a good setup there, Harry, with your mum babysitting. Yeah, poor woman. What else have we got in the live chat? A big hello to Harry. Thank you for all your kind words, mate. Really, really appreciate your support. Wesbird also says, do you think Arteta's lack of rotation and unwillingness to use certain players and drop certain players is a problem? And does that need to improve going forward into next season? I think if there was one thing that I think Mikel Arteta can work on, and I think there are a few things for the record, I don't think he's the finished article as a manager. Why would he be? He's still at the very beginning stages of his managerial career, really. When you zoom out, look at how long he's been doing it, the fact that this is his first job, you know, he is still learning and he is still developing along the way. But if there was one thing that I think is really obviously not there yet, it's his ability to get the balance right when rotating. I've seen him rotate and maybe over-rotate, and I've also seen him under-rotate in terms of the workload that he puts on certain players. And both of those things can have negative effects and negative impact. I think it's a really difficult art to understand how much rotation you can get away with without the fundamentals of your game being lost and therefore your performance level dropping a lot. I think some managers are really good at it, others not so good at it. Sometimes you can change two or three players and that'd be perfectly fine as long as you're changing the right two or three players. But then the problem with that is that if there's people that are really obviously the ones that you're going to rotate, for example, in our team, you know pretty much that there are, you know what most of the lineup is. There's probably three positions up for grabs. Who's going to play with Rice in midfield? Who's going to play at left back? And who's going to play on the left wing? Those are the three positions where there could potentially be some change. And, you know, if you make changes in those positions, more often than not, we get away with it. But at the same time, you know, it means that nobody else really gets a breather. Nobody else really gets a rest. And it also says that there's only a select group of the squad players that Mikel Arteta thinks are worthy of coming in and out of the side. Or does it mean that he thinks, for example, that Martinelli's nowhere near as good as Saka? That's why he keeps rotating him and Trossard, but always picks Saka. Does it mean that, you know, he thinks, well, he obviously knows and thinks Odegaard's head and shoulders above everyone else, but he obviously thinks Ben White is a much better right back than any of his left back options. Do you see what I'm trying to say? And it kind of highlights the fact that, you know, he does feel limited in what he has, even still, even after all that money spent and all the kind of player turnover and new players coming in that we've had. Paritosh says, what's happened to Partey looks really off the pace. Maybe that's why Mikel doesn't trust him. I really do believe, mate, that Partey won't get anywhere near fitness level or full fitness level if he's not playing football. And the fact is he's not being picked to play football matches at the moment. And so when he comes on, he's always going to look rusty. Very difficult to get into games that you haven't been playing in from the start, particularly for someone who would have spent most of his career starting football matches. There are some players that are really good at coming on, getting up to the speed of the game nice and quickly, and that can be really impactful from a substitute's bench. Some players can't do that. I still believe and still strongly think, actually, that Thomas Partey should be getting more game time at the moment than he actually is. And even if it is because Mikel Arteta is not 100% sure about his fitness, he's got to look at someone like Declan Rice and think at some point, at some stage, even if it's 20 minutes here and there, I've got to be able to give you a breather. And the only person that can come in and even get remotely close to his performance levels is Thomas Partey. Yeah, he's not at his best. He's not at his sharpest, but he will only get there if he plays football. Yeah. Okay. Odradek says, do you think Spurs would let City win if it meant Arsenal would win the league? If they didn't, I wouldn't put anything past Spurs, to be honest with you. I grew up watching Spurs basically lay down every time they played Man United when we were involved in title races with them. So, you know, I know Ange tells everybody that he's still in the title race and that he wants to win it all and that top four isn't good enough for him, etc., etc. But I'm sure inside the walls of Tottenham's training ground, there'll be plenty of discussions if it got to that stage about how seriously they take their game with Manchester City in order to maybe potentially mess Arsenal up. Lots of questions about Thomas Partey. I've kind of already answered those, so I won't go back over them. Mohammed says, we haven't seen Smith Rowe since the Luton game. Well, we saw him as a sub. He got a brief appearance against Villa the other day. He was the one chasing back for the Ollie Watkins goal. And he says, Mohammed, that he should have played more recently. Again, you know, I can only assume that something's not right in Mikel Arteta's mind when it comes to Emile Smith Rowe. Is it that, you know, he's not fit enough yet? But again, going back to the Partey scenario, if you're not playing, how can you be match fit? Completely agree with that and think that's a real sort of valid argument, counter argument. But when he's had opportunities, has he really taken them? I mean, I thought he was quite good against Luton. I thought he was a disaster when he came on against Villa, and I'm not blaming him for the goal even. I just thought his touches were off. I thought he bottled a couple of challenges that he really ought to have been getting stuck into. And I just don't think he's done enough to convince Mikel Arteta that he should be moving someone out of their position in order for him to come in. So, yeah, that's where I am on Emile Smith Rowe. Look, just to summarize, we are back top of the pile for now, for a few hours at least. Liverpool, of course, have a game in hand, and Manchester City will end up having two games in hand once we play, Chelsea on Tuesday night. So look, the table is going to be really topsy-turvy now, between now and the end of the season. But we need there to be twists. We need there to be turns. We went out there tonight and we got the job done. It wasn't vintage Arsenal by any stretch of the imagination. I don't think we learned anything new about this Arsenal team other than they are still fighting for this title and they are still desperate to push City all of the way. And if you do that, well, you never know. So fingers crossed, we can be celebrating at the end of the season, hey, hopefully. But yeah, look, job done. It wasn't great, but it was effective. We got the job done. No need to really dwell on it. There's no point in even thinking about this one for too much longer. Now that the full-time whistle's gone, it's all focused now on Chelsea at Emirates Stadium. And we'll be bringing you a full preview to that game on Monday's edition of the Chronicles of Aguna podcast. And yeah, can't wait for that one. Until the next time, take care of yourselves. Enjoy the rest of your Saturday evening or your Sundays if you're listening to us on audio. All the best. Goodbye.